Hello and welcome back to my season in review. Tonight I'm delighted to be joined by Jasper Stuyven of Trek Segafredo. Jasper, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
And where in the world do we find you tonight?
I'm home in Monaco at the moment.
So winter training has started?
Yes, I've been on the bike for 1 week or 8 days, you can say. Easy start.
So if we rewind and go back to last winter, you had a different route to the start of the season in that you opened at the opening weekend, which I think is the first time you've done that. How did that feel? Did you feel as ready as everybody else? Did you feel underprepared, or how was it?
I think the normal plan was to do Algarve, but then I think got cancelled last moment or end of January. And we had already the plan with the team to just don't try to mix up too many things, but just do another training camp with the team. So I didn't really mind it. I felt ready, and also the training camp went really well. I had my own altitude camp in Teide, in Tenerife, and then continued by another week with the team in Spain. And there I enjoyed it. It was a small group, so of course it's always nicer to go on training camp with a small group. There's some high intensity and high quality training. Maybe a bit too much if you look to the first race, but I didn't really feel, I wasn't too worried going into the opening weekend. It turned out that it was not so good, but I think it was more the last week with the team that we maybe killed each other a little bit, and it took some time to get back from that overreaching, let's say.
It's always a kind of difficult decision, isn't it? Do you want to be really good opening weekend, or do you want to come good kind of later? So that opening weekend, Umloop did not go well for the team at all. As you said, maybe you killed each other on training camp, but in Kurna, Mads got the win, you were in the breakaway, you then did a really good lead out for him. So I suppose the weekend was a success.
Yeah, at the end you always see, or we also read a lot of comments that we won by luck and that we were not really present enough during Kurna. But at the end, Mess is on top of the list on Sunday, and there's only two teams winning the opening classics, and Trek was one of them. So I don't think there was much to complain about. Winning is winning, and it was nice to kick back from a terrible Saturday, and I really enjoyed that feeling, and that it's also something I mentioned from the beginning or from the moment I stepped on the bus after Omloop, that I couldn't believe that that we were so much behind, because that was a little bit, some guys were thinking, how is it possible? We were riding so well last week, and the other guys are just so much better. I really didn't believe that. So I was convinced that we just had to believe in that the preparation was right, and that we just had to go all in again on Sunday. And I think it was nice to prove a lot of people wrong, and at least take Kurne into the pocket. So it was nice to go to the next races.
You received quite a lot of criticism after Umloop. Do you read it? Do you use it as motivation?
After Omloop, I didn't really check it because with the team already, you're a bit down. But I have to say that I was on my own with like two or three guys from quite far out from the finish. So let's say the last 8K, when you're really more coasting to the line, I had a lot of time to process and get my mind already onto the Sunday race. And that really helped on speaking with the media afterwards, to getting to the bus and keeping a positive mindset and try to cheer everyone up. Of course, then I think that really helped. Like if you are still racing and then things go wrong and you have to suffer and keep pushing, then you get to the line and you didn't even have the time to reflect or think about it, and then it's a different situation. So I think that was really beneficial for me, but also for the team.
So then you go to Paris-Nice. It was quite a boring Paris-Nice from your kind of perspective. There was no kind of wind. There wasn't many splits. When you left Paris-Nice with Milan San Remo just around the corner, how were you feeling? How were the legs?
To be honest, the legs were not super good. I felt I was still suffering a bit from that overreaching. And I think nowadays, especially a race like Tirreno or Paris-Nice at that time of the year, you really need to know when you're preparing another race, because I have the feeling that nowadays every race is such a high level, and I'm not a rider that can be 100% competitive when I'm not 100% myself in shape. There was days that I was suffering, then days that I was feeling better, but I went home from Paris-Nice with the feeling that I was strong, but I was pushing good numbers, but I wasn't feeling really, really good. I felt like I need a few days to get this change in the body to get that peak level. I could use some confidence.
So then pre-race Milano San Remo, what was the team tactic?
Team tactic was a bit like, I think, in every team. After seeing Tirreno, we also talked about, okay, there's three guys. They're way, way above everyone else. So it's just about, if you get a chance to follow them, follow them. If not, try to still get a good result. And of course, we had Vincenzo also there. So he had the opportunity or the chances to go a longer way out or even try something himself. And then, I had the... most of the day I had just Toms and Ryan with me to take care of me, and of course at the end going to the capos or the capis, it's about being together with the team. So of course the work from Jacopo also I was benefiting from, so it's a bit you could feel, I think, with a lot of teams that they were maybe scared about with like the big three, where in my opinion, I didn't really agree on that, because every classic still has to be ridden. And I think that was, at the end of the day, now I can say that was the perfect or the good mindset to go towards the start line, I think.
Do you as a team or as a rider plan different scenarios? Like, okay, I'm in, after Poggio, a group of five, what do I do? A group of 10, what do I do? Do you think about that before the race starts?
No, in a certain way, yes. But I think the answer on the other end will always be, you need to see who is there. Because
if you're the fastest.
The fastest, how did you feel? Are there teammates? Yes, how many? There's so many factors that comes into play. So the only thing I did mention to a friend the day before, a few days before, was that I told him, like, if I'm still there with them, with the little group, I will give it like a try and prefer to go all in and have nothing. But maybe I get all. And at the end, that's maybe exactly what happened.
So during the race, there was a split near the top of the Cipressa. Were you front group or were you second group?
I was front group.
Okay, so then we've got my favorite bit of the race, which is the run into the bottom of the Poggio. I watched it back, so you're on the right-hand side. I think you're sitting behind Ineos and Caleb Ewan, maybe. Yeah. And then you've got everybody trying to come round on the left-hand side. Is that kind of approach as fun, as crazy as it looks on TV?
Yes, but it wasn't at the moment, because I actually always I'm one of the guys that is coming from the left. And for some reason, Ineos took control a bit earlier than you would expect, coming out of the tunnel. So they blocked it also because Ineos is a team that is really good in holding their side of the road. So I was in the middle and waiting to open up, and then I saw it was Ineos in front. So I knew, okay, they won't open up, so I need to find a solution. And while I was moving to the right, I think at the time I was on the right side of the peloton, Jasper passed with Caleb in his wheel. And then I also knew, okay, Jasper is bringing Caleb to the front. That's the bottom of the Poggio will be his last moment. So it was a good wheel to follow to the front. And then I also knew, okay, if you're there, the fifth or sixth wheel on the right side, you're also quite okay to get into the Poggio fine. But it was the first time in I didn't do it every year, Sanremo, but it was the first time that I was on the right. So normally I position myself more on the left side.
So then you get on to Poggio. You're about, I think you're about 10th, 15th wheel once the climb opened up. You hit your whole position well. At what point going up the Poggio do you realize that you're on a good day?
Actually, the moment after, right before the first switchback, because normally there I always struggled a bit with holding the position when guys were moving up, but there I was able to hold my position and fight for it. And then also the movement, the feeling on how I was sustaining the effort. It's like, I think as a rider, you feel if you're really struggling or fighting a bit, or when you're really in a, yeah, let's say comfort zone, but of course it's not comfortable. So then I knew, okay, if Mathieu or Wout or Julien would attack, I could feel that I had still something to react and to accelerate, which is nice because has been other moments where, you know, if they will accelerate now, it's just about trying to keep this same tempo.
So the attacks go, you managed to follow the first move, and then there was another move, and I think Michael Matthews closes that move and you follow him, and then you must realize, I think it was near the top of the Poggio, okay, this is the group, I'm in the front group. So my question would be, when you go down the descent, are you able to start thinking about who's in the group? What's your tactic going to be? Can you think about that when it's going so fast?
Going over the top, I knew there was all individuals. I didn't exactly know the guys behind me because, of course, at the end, there's a few who came back in the downhill or were just like one or two bike lengths behind me. But I also knew, I saw Michael there, I saw Wout there, I saw Caleb there. So I realized quite fast, okay, I need to try something here. But having Pidcock and Julien there was maybe also good for me because that makes it only more guys looking to each other. Yeah, I going into the downhill, I really practice, I'm not going to say a lot, but I think for Sanremo, one of the important things is like you come to the top of the Poggio and then your heart rate is, let's say, 200. And then the difference can be like to have a strong brain activity, let's say, for the downhill because it's technical, but at the same time to recover. And I think I managed that pretty well. So knowing the downhill pretty good, and then they didn't go all out in the downhill, so it gave me the time to really overlook the situation a bit more. And I think at that moment also they told me in the radio that I should try something, which I already realized at that moment.
So then the moment comes, there's a slight slowing. I think Julien looked to attack, he might have been blocked, I think, and it didn't happen. And then there's a moment of calm, and then you take your chance, you go. Yeah. When do you look back?
Quite fast, I think.
Because... No, when did you look back and see, are they following, or did you just head down, go?
I didn't look back. I think I looked back on that corner before, and I saw that Trentin was in my wheel. So the moment I went to the left, like trying to make it sneaky, I was scared he would follow me there. So the moment I attacked, I looked back to see if he was there or not. And there, I think because we used a little bit of the last part of the downhill, and having the 54.10 of SRAM is maybe one of the benefits that I could use there. And to really launch and keep the speed high, or put it even higher, which was not so ideal once we got to the flat part. But yeah, I think the moment to make the gap was the most important on such a moment, and I managed it quite well. But of course, I wasn't sure the moment I attacked if I was going to be alone or not.
So then Søren Krag Andersen does come across to you. I think he reached you about a kilometer to go, I think it was roughly that. At that point, the TV cuts away, and the next thing we see is that he's on the front and you're trying to recover. So what happened in that short space of time? Did you just tell him you need to ride, or did he just go?
No, actually, I decided for myself when I saw him closing that I was going to really use the chicane, let's say, to recover myself. That's why I didn't, you see that I don't push full through until that corner. And actually, once we took the last right corner, I went to the right and wanted to let him pull. But what he did was actually go to the other side of the road and make an attack. And there I really had to dig quite deep to hold the wheel. But I think for them, he realized, I mean, that was his moment to try to beat me. And after that, he realized when I was still on the wheel, it was not going to happen. So then he kept the pace high just so he could be still on the podium, which was nice for me. And I had this 200 or 300 meters to recover in his wheel recover as much as possible in his wheel to still have something left.
So then you obviously, you sprint, you win, not by a huge amount in the end. They got quite close. So then post-race, you've just won a monument. You know, you've ticked off one of the biggest races in cycling. When do you start to realize what an incredible achievement that is?
To be honest, I think when I was changing for the podium, I had like the first, you know, 1 minute that I was realizing it, and then after that it was gone again for another 10 minutes, and it came in waves, let's say, of realizing it. And then it was like, again, like, okay, I just want to race, it's fine. And then 10 minutes later, again, like, I won my first monument. So it was a strange experience, to be honest. It took me a little bit longer than I think 2 or 3 days that I fully realized it. But at the moment, the hours after was strange because it was really on and off.
So then season's obviously not over. You've got a long way to go. Next, you go to E3 and you were looking quite good. I think you had poor positioning for the Paterberg, and then the attack goes and you're too far back. How frustrating is it when you know you're in a bad spot going on?
I was really pissed with myself that I wasn't aggressive enough, because at the end there were Kung and Trentin who made an aggressive, I mean, not aggressive in a bad way, but they just went and took two spots or three spots in front of me, but they were completely empty, so they blocked the whole road on the gutter, and there's no way you can go around it and then pass them and then close the gap. And I was maybe a bit too relaxed there, or not paying too much enough attention, which I was I was really frustrated with, because I was feeling well, and I just, if you know that there's already seven guys in front, then it doesn't need to take another seven. It only needs to take four that goes, and with four, you sometimes think, oh, it's only four. I'll follow the next move, but there was no next move because there was already seven or eight in front. So I was a bit I was disappointed, but also more frustrated with myself because I felt it was more me. Like, okay, you can say it's about positioning, but at the end, I should have been the one that was more aggressive to, especially on a climb like Paterberg, to be with Wout or with Mathieu.
Then how were you feeling as you approached Tour of Flanders?
To be honest, it was very strange because of course we didn't start Gent-Wevel again. We were woken up in the middle of the night. We got the news that we couldn't race. Then we were isolated. Then we had testing every day. Then Waar again was also like yes or no or maybe. Of course, then I was happy to race. But then we went to Flanders and then also Steven was not in the car anymore. Then we didn't really have a strong team because half of them was just replacements, last minute call-ups. Then the other guys were like a mess. He was feeling sick, but he didn't test positive. So it was a big mess. So was not the ideal week to go into the Tour of Flanders. The only positive thing for myself was that I felt good in Waal again and it was nice to race. But I would have liked to have a team without COVID situations, of course. I was more having confidence or trusting the shape that I had in E3 and not trying not to think about the mental or the tiredness that I had from the situation in the team.
And you rode a good race. You were near the front at crucial points. Obviously, you just missed the podium. Greg just pips you for the sprint for third, but fourth place, you're getting closer to what would be a huge result in a very tough race.
Yeah. It was, for me personally, how I experienced the race is that in that group behind, we had climbs where for example, me, Turgy, Laporte were the strongest. And then we could go to the next climb where me, Toji and Laporte were almost, you know, getting dropped. And then three other guys or two other guys were having the impression of being stronger. And the feeling this was a kind of balance in that group. Going to the line, I actually was quite empty. I think also I didn't really feel super that day, but I told myself that that I wasn't in a great shape, that it couldn't be gone, that it was a matter of the head to keep fighting. And I think that day really did make a difference. And I was in Greg's wheel when he attacked, but I didn't react immediately. And actually, when he had the gap, I was so pissed that I didn't follow him. So that's why I ended up still jumping. And of course, that's maybe also the last bullet I spent instead of being straight on the wheel and have something left for the sprint. I was, to be honest, I was happy with fourth place. And yes, I would have loved to be third already in Flanders and not a monument. If you look to the whole situation and how I raced that race, I had no regrets on finishing fourth.
It must give you confidence for seasons to come. The fact that you had such a interrupted lead up, you didn't feel amazing on the day, yet you still finished fourth. Surely for next year and the years to come, you must be thinking, I can podium, I can win.
Yeah, but a lot of other guys I was thinking the same probably because they were in that group. They improved from the last year. So another step, they will also be there. I think... The past have learned that it's not that easy to always be improving. But I think that's for me the biggest takeaway this year that I felt that I could race different in those big classics and those big races. And that I felt that I could really race the final and especially Flanders to be really moving closer to podium or victory.
you mentioned the big three earlier, so Julian, Wout and Matthew. Do you think their effect on cycling is that it forces some riders, some top riders, to be almost too defensive, where you benefited from being attacking in Milan-San Remo? You know, do you think they have, it's not their fault, but a negative impact on some other riders?
Yes, I definitely think that. I'm pretty sure there are riders that lose confidence and just are there to wait and wait for them. And maybe me winning San Remo gave some confidence to a lot of guys that were in my situation, that it's not because those three are there that you can't win the race anymore. Yeah, I think some guys are a bit, they don't race their own race anymore.
So then you go to Dauphiné, you have two fourth places. How were you approaching Tour de France? How were you feeling?
I was feeling quite amazing in Dauphiné and the week after. And then for some reason, the week before the tour, I felt something was off, and that I could push all the numbers, but I felt more tired. And this also, I had the same feeling the first days in the tour. So it was not an easy start, not for me, but also not for the team, because Mass was not in a great shape, and they put a lot of pressure on him for the sprints, especially after 2020, where he showed a lot of potential. It was, I think, a stressful start for me and for the team this year.
So you've said before, winning a stage at the Tour de France is a big goal, obviously. You've been very close before. A rider like yourself only has maybe two or three chances in every Tour de France, and then you've got to get in the breakaway, you've got to finish it off. So the stage to Le Creusot, you get in the big break, but also in that big break is Mohoric and Van Aert and Van Der Poel and some big riders. So when you made that break, what were you thinking? How were you going to play the rest of the stage?
I was a bit worried because the group was that big, like really the big names were there. So it's a little bit different than ending up with a group of 10 or less. So I was doubting for a long time how I was going to play it. But then I think it was Mohoric with Brent who went away. And then you could see it started like no one was committed. Like the other guys didn't want to sacrifice a teammate yet because it was still a long way out. And Victor Campanas, he came already a few times to me like, we need to go, we need to go, we need to jump. I want to attack, you follow. And I told him, nah, we need to wait because we really spoke about the parkour in a meeting. And I also checked it that, I mean, it wouldn't have made sense to try a bit earlier. And then, at one moment he came again and I felt, okay, it's time to go. And then he launched the attack. And I think that was good that we know each other. We went all in to catch the first two. And then also because, that a lot of guys will wait for Mathieu and they'll wait for a while to make their move. A bit like we just talked about, that they're scared to try themselves. And I think I managed to still ride my own race and also think ahead that a lot of guys will wait and look to those two.
And then you finished second, which is a great result. The last climb was just, it was too hard. Mohoric was on a great day, but you're getting so close to taking that Tour de France win. But it is so hard because, as I said, there's only two or three stages per year.
The problem is a little bit that if I go in those stages like now, then I always will end up with a guy like Mohoric or a climber that is there with me, and then I there need to be one day that I can hold on. And on the other side, if it would be less hard, then maybe there would be a team controlling and try to making a sprint out of it. So I really feel like the stages are very, very limited. And then I still also need to be lucky with how races are going, especially later in the tour with fights for green. Like we have seen in 2020, there has been like two or three stages that were potentially for breakaways, but because of the green jersey fight, that didn't happen at all. But overall, yes, I've been close again, and I would love to get it one day, and I'll definitely keep trying it.
So then fast forward to World Championships, just how special was it to ride at home World Championships?
I think it's really hard to describe. I think everyone experienced how special it was in Belgium with how many people were on the road. But for me, the first time we entered the circuit, and also the first two laps from the four laps in between, I really told myself to enjoy, and I also literally had goosebumps, and was hard to describe how crazy it felt for me to race such a big event on home streets.
Now, people have had their say on the tactics that day with Remco and such like. What I would like to talk about is the finale. So, Julian attacks on the climb and earlier on, and Wout doesn't follow. And then everybody's thinking, okay, maybe it was a good move. Maybe he was just waiting. When you get into the final lap circuit, did you think you had a chance of winning?
You mean when I was already with Michael, Dylan?
No. When everybody was still together, before Julian kind of got away.
Because I was really, for me, the first time, on the Smashberg, when Wout didn't follow, I really thought he was, so it's also maybe not one to accept that he didn't have a good day, but that's also because he didn't tell it then. Or not a good day as expected, let's put it that way. I really thought he played it smart because he knew I was there, and then also to give the chance to have Remco as long as possible. So that would make still three of us. I think that was more of the idea. And then for me, when I saw Cobrelli jumping with Julien, I also had the feeling like, is Julien going to ride with him or the other way around? Which also didn't really happen at one moment. So, I was a bit of thinking, and then we went to the local circuit, so I was still all in for Wout, so I was not thinking about winning myself at that point.
And then Julian goes, you're left with Michael Valgren, Dylan Van Baal. That was like a Monaco group ride, the three of you.
Yeah.
How hard was it to beat those two guys? Because it seemed really, it was tactical, and Van Baal was sitting on. It was no wonder he had the energy to sprint for second. It seemed a very difficult fight for the podium.
For me, I think there was, if I look back now, I think that was the disadvantage of racing in Leuven, in my hometown. Because, of course, Julien was on a very, very good day. But at one point, we were at 8 seconds. We could, see him there. And I was racing for a very long time. I think maybe until 3K to go, I was racing to win. And Dylan and Michael were racing for a medal. And that's, it's there. I mean, is there a good choice because they got the medal? But I think as a racer, you need to race to win, especially when Julien is only 8 seconds in front of you. So of course, I was pulling full. They were maybe for a longer time already saving a little bit, then not pulling. I was maybe a little bit excited with the crowd and still trying to achieve and go for it. And that cost me, I think, especially if you see how hard we raced the whole day. It's not about being fast. It's about being what you have left in the tank. And I think that last lap, I definitely lost a lot more than them. Just because they were racing for a medal and not for the win anymore, which I think is a bit, not disappointing, but it is what it is, but I would love to see it different.
Yeah, if everybody pulled, it could have been a different story.
Yeah, and Julien probably would still have won. But you don't know that, because then you would be five. Maybe tactics comes into play. I mean, maybe Nielsen would have won. Okay, then you can discuss that Julien is a nicer world champion than Nielsen, but still, it's about giving yourself the chance to actually race for the win. I miss that vibe a little bit with Dylan and Michael in the final.
So then we go to Paris-Roubaix. So you're normally very strong in this kind of end of season period, August onwards, but Paris-Roubaix was just an unlucky shit day. Yeah.
I was prepared to crash, and to be honest, I was also a bit scared to go to the first sector. Once that was over with, I felt some stress going away, and I was ready to race the race. But then, yeah, I had to change the bike at the same time that Wout is changing bike, because that was on TV, so that's like kind of a comparison. But then I got a bike that also had a mechanical. So I ended up changing to the other bike, then I crashed on the car, changing again to the other bike, ending up changing to my initial bike that was fixed, like I think 1K before Havre-Louis. And you also know that Havre-Louis is one of the most important points, because after that, you go to the forest, and then trying to pass people on Havre-Louis, I got launched into the field, into the ditch because of another guy having a flat tire and going full to the right. So I chased for a very long time alone. And then you just know that part is your final. And at one point I make it back, but you just know that the moment the first guys start their final, it's for me, I can just hold the tempo and not go with them anymore. So that was a bit frustrating. But on the other hand, I think everyone knew with Roubaix that how it was this year, that that's how it was. Like, you knew you're gonna if there was a high chance of flat, you knew there was gonna be a high chance of crashes. Of course, I like it that I got a spare bike that also was had a mechanical. Of course not, but are the mechanics doing such a things on purpose? Also, of course not. So. That's just a mechanical sport, and it was a bit disappointing, especially after Worlds. Like, you know, it was a hard week to turn the page and then also prepare yourself mentally for another really hard battle. But I was happy with how I did it, and I accepted the bad luck I had that day, and also the team had, unfortunately, that day. It's a race that I still love, but I would prefer to do it in the dry.
So after your fourth place at Flanders, so in my head, I've always had you as a Paris-Roubaix winner, okay? But Flanders, you're getting closer. So do you think you potentially could win either race, or do you have a race you think you're better at?
I still think I'm better at Roubaix. And there has been a moment that I really thought, okay, I can win all the classics except Flanders. That did change a little bit. I think 2018 was the first time I really raced a bit the final. And then the 2 years after, I struggled with some other problems. Also 2020, I knew I was not on the best shape. So considering that, I was still happy with where I ended. So then this year, gave me again a bit more confidence that I can, that I'm convinced that I can be challenging and maybe win Flanders. Will I win it? I'm not going to say that. Would I like to win it? Of course. Does Roubaix fit me better? I personally think so. Yeah.
So you are 29 years old. It looks like you're getting stronger. Do you believe the best years are still to come?
I always told myself when I turned pro that I was aiming to be at my best between my 28th and 34th, which at this moment is showing off in a good trend, let's say. So yes, I believe that. Of course, there's also been a change in the whole peloton, that there's guys from 19 years old in the pro peloton that are doing amazing stuff. So it's putting a little bit in perspective, but I feel that I've been stronger. I've been more, for me, maybe took longer than a guy like Pogačar to find the balance and good preparation. So I think for me, I still feel that I've become stronger as well this season.
Last question. At the end of the season, you were asked what you were looking forward to doing in the winter, and you said drinking some nice wine. So which nice wines have you been drinking?
Yeah. Do you have a minute?
Yeah.
What's
been your best? What's the best wine you've had this winter?
To be honest, I had a really nice new... I discovered a new winemaker. Not that he's like completely new, but I hadn't had a good bottle of him yet. It's from La Mora in the Barolo region, Piemonte, and it's from Lorenzo Accomasso, and I had a 2007, and for me that's the bottle that's the best of the off season.
Well, Jasper, thank you very much for giving up your time tonight to chat through 2021. Hopefully 2022 we can win another monument and maybe that Tour de France stage.
I'll definitely try to chase it. Thank you.